hace. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Thursday, January 2nd, 2020. I'm Kevin Larame, still a bit under the weather, but joined by Dwayne Mullins as always. Dwayne, how was your New Year's?
I was fine. I saw a Toronto band called Dwayne Gretzky. You heard that right, Dwayne Gretzky. They're a cover band, but they do it a little weird. They're very good at what they do. So yes, they were pretty good.
Not
and
really.
Home fairly early, home by one.
That's pretty good.
Had a sober like two beers all night. So New Year's Day was wonderful. The best I've had in many years. I recommend it to anyone. It's much better than the alternative.
Yeah, yesterday I kind of unplugged my phone and didn't really felt part of the online community, I guess, took a day off, and today, starting the year off and doing a show, routine's kind of back, the holidays are kind of over. We still want to wish everyone a happy new year, everything you wish for 2020. If you work for it, you can achieve it. But Dwayne, as it is tradition, we like to do fun shows to begin the year, get back into the groove, and let's make a 10 bold MLS predictions for 2020. And you know, I didn't really believe this, but I'll start with this one. It is not necessarily a really bold one, but it's one that, yes, they have a coach now and they have a few interesting player. The stadium is taking shape, but since 2013, Miami for me has been just mistake after mistake, and I cannot fathom them being good, can they? So here's my bold prediction. They won't be. They'll be out of the playoffs in their year number one in Major League Soccer. That's my first bold prediction for this 2020 prediction show.
I understand where you're coming from in the sense that that there seems to be a lot of glitz and not a lot of sort of substance to a lot of what Miami's been doing. And of course, we quite rightly made fun of them for years and years and years, because it really was years and years and years, about the fact that they made that announcement in 2013 saying that they were intending to get a team, which is still to this day remains the most absurd press conference I have ever taken time out of my life to watch. At any rate, here we are 7 years later, 7 calendar years later, and they finally are here. I actually have the opposite prediction. So my first prediction is actually that they are good and they host a playoff game, which is, I think, bold, because right now there's a lot of roster spots to do. But I look at the money that's going to go into it. I look at the market, and I know how players think. And when they say they're coming to MLS, they're not talking about Columbus. As I've said before, they're talking about the places that they recognize as being fun and that they would like to live in one day. And Miami, South Beach, is one of those places. Yes, they're going to play in Fort Lauderdale.
No, for a few years.
That's not South Beach. There's no, you know, there's far less. I'm sure you can find all of the vices you want in Fort Lauderdale too. You can find them in Columbus too, but yeah, not quite as sexy. But nonetheless, I think you'll find a couple guys will be enticed enough to show up there, and that they will figure out a way in what I think is going to be a very strange and rebuilding East this year to make the playoffs. So that is my bold prediction, is that Miami makes the playoffs and maybe challenges is to host a playoff game as well.
Yeah, the Fontainebleau Hotel is a bit more enticing than the Blue Fountain Motel. So no, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I've actually, I'm sort of half planning a trip to Miami for April when TFC plays down there, because the flights are quite cheap. And my friend Steve, who I think is a listener to this show, has recommended that we stay in Fort Lauderdale, because there is a down market place there that he has a lot of fun in when he goes down there. So it's not that you can't have fun outside of South Beach. In fact, I think once you hit a certain age, of which I think I hit 7 years ago, you probably shouldn't be in South Beach anyway, unless you're a degenerate, which some listeners are laughing and saying, so I'll see you in South Beach.
Which you never know. All right, let's move on and continue our 10 bold MLS predictions for 2020. So this will be, I guess, number 8. There's no numbers, but it's just 10 predictions. And this one is a bit bold, especially, Dwayne, if you look at the recent history of Major League Soccer, I'll be like, what? This is impossible. But I think recent history will take its toll, and we'll see it happen this year in Seattle. In 2020, the Seattle Sounders will not make the playoffs. Is that bold enough for you? The defending champions will not make the playoffs in 2020 in a congested Western Conference.
It's very bold. I disagree. And I'm going to save my Seattle prediction for a little bit further down on this for my own purposes, because it's going to work better with me. Look, I predicted them Seattle out of the playoffs 2 years ago. And in fact, I think I did it 2 years in a row. Excuse me. It was almost like your SKC prediction for a while there, to the point that I finally learned my lesson. This is a team that figures out consistency. So we'll see. There will come a year where they will not make the playoffs. It will happen. But
yeah,
well, I don't think it'll be this year.
My thought process is Father Time is undefeated, and a hunger is there. But it's after you win once, yeah, you want to repeat. After you win it twice, you're like, okay, yeah. But it's the length of the calendar, the amount of games, also the U.S. Open Cup, and next year, the CONCACAF Champions League for the Seattle Sounders. I think it will play a big part with Father Time undefeated, and you will see, I believe, a Seattle Sounders team struggling. Maybe they'll finish just outside the playoffs, but it will still mean no playoffs for Seattle.
Interesting to see is what the extra month will do for those teams that play deep, because we have seen teams struggle coming out of a long run over the past couple of years, particularly when factored in with the CCL runs themselves. I mean, Toronto KFC or KFC SKC.
Okay, you're making me hungry now. Like, I want a sandwich, but go ahead.
Exactly. Well, KFC came out of my mouth. I'd never eat there, but nonetheless.
Yeah, it's probably good for you that you don't eat there.
It will be interesting because there is the extra month, of course. And, you know, the season ended, what, was November 13th. So it's been a full more than a month. It's like 5 weeks sooner than it did with TFC Seattle Part 1. So we'll be interested to see what that is. Okay, so I'll go into my second prediction here now, and that is, now that the distraction is gone, now that the God among men's, the Ferrari among Fiat's, the whatever you want to call it is gone, and I don't know how bold this is, but I actually think that the LA Galaxy are going to be much better, that Zlatan is no longer with them. They can focus on building a system and focus on building a team that can actually compete, and they have the resources to do so. So I am going to predict the LA Galaxy's finished in the top three in the West and are much better and a much more legitimate MLS Cup contending team without the arrogant one himself. That
you don't even have to name. We don't talk about Zlatan. I agree with you. And it's funny to say this because I was reading on MLSsoccer.com like a wish for every team in 2020, an article that was published earlier or yesterday, I believe. And they're talking about the Patrick Ewing theory for DC United and Wayne Rooney. And the Patrick Ewing theory, if you don't know, it's famously in the early 90s, Bill Simmons of SportsCenter, ESPN back then, before he started working for 30 for 30, he had a theory that the Knicks are a lot better when Patrick Ewing is benched and not playing, because they don't feel like they have to give him the ball all the time, and they don't feel they have to feed their big ego player on the team. I do feel like the Patrick Ewing theory does apply for the LA Galaxy, and not having the egotistical Zlatan himself, part of this team, yelling at his teammates, asking for the ball, teammates will feel a certain amount of freedom that they can actually play with the ball and maybe score. Yeah, that'll be a big difference. The Patrick Ewing theory fits for the LA Galaxy in 2020.
Yeah, just a way to not having to deal with the drama of it every day. I mean, we've all had a friend in our life that was fan dynamic and that you really at first loved having around and felt that they made you cooler by your presence. But by, you know, the fifth or sixth or seventh time that you went out and everything was about them, you started to go, you know what, I kind of just would rather hang out with my old friends and get rid of this prima donna here, right? So I think there's an element of that that will happen, and there will be an element of relaxation that occurs. You know, it's the same with that friend analogy. You used to like try and get yourself in like two skinny suits and try and be too cool dressed looking, and yeah, you never felt yourself. So hopefully that will happen for the Gumball, unless you hate the Galaxy. Hopefully that will happen for them now that the tan is gone. Far less entertaining for those that are absorbing outsider, but like I think we were both sick of them by the end. It's, and we weren't alone on that too. It's there comes a point where it's like, we get it. You're a lot. We get it.
This is going to sound a bit deep, but sometimes I go deep in my thought process. I've been bullied in high school and in school in general, and I bullied as well, like if fair enough to say it, but it's the counterbalance of being bullied for years and years. And when I look at Zlatan and the way he treated other player in this league, it's that feeling that comes up within me. It's that I'm seeing a bully in action, and I don't like it, and I want to defend that. So maybe it's my bias and my past experiences that makes me see something I don't like in this world, and I see it in Zlatan. Maybe it's not there, or maybe he is a bully, and that's why I don't like him.
Fair enough. All right, are we ready for my third?
It's mine. Mine, yours?
Yeah, you jump in. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll go with my third. Nashville will surprise a lot of people and contend for a playoff spot. I don't know if they will make the playoffs, but leadership, Dax McCarthy rejuvenated in Nashville, surrounded with experienced and young players. I think Nashville can surprise and be about seventh. They can contend for a playoff spot. That's my third bold prediction for this show.
Yeah, I agree that I think Nashville is going to be just kind of there. And that just kind of there in a weaker East equates to around 6, 7, 8. And, you know, that is in the bloated playoff system a playoff spot, right? Whether that's good or not, who's to say? But Nashville has been built with the idea. I've heard interviews where they said that they want to not be – how they put it, and it's kind of funny, it's kind of an ironic statement, is that they don't want to be memorable. And that sounds silly on one hand because, you know, Atlanta was memorable. LAFC were memorable. But
Minnesota was memorable for not the right reasons.
And Cincinnati.
And Cincinnati.
They realized that they can't be memorable the way LAFC is and Atlanta were. But they don't want to be memorable the way the other teams were. And that kind of equates to getting some veterans in there, getting some solid core developed, getting some continuity, realizing that there's going to be a certain level of time that your fans are going to give you to get things right, and that they're going to be accepting of losses in that first year because they're just going to be happy to be in the stadium, having fun and having a team to cheer for and players to, you know, start to become heroes, right? And if you can do that and evolve nicely over a couple of years, then, you know, that's a good plan, I think. I actually think it's something that they should be applauded for admitting that that's what their goal is, because I think too often, you know, we're here to compete and win championships off the top. Can you afford a $10 million DP? No, but we're here to compete.
And I think it's a waste of resources too. If you look at it pragmatically, MLS will become a league where there's going to be a window. Okay. If you're a mid-table team with Nashville, like, Nashville is not Miami in a way that Miami comes in with the glitz and glamour and the ambition of being a top team. We'll see if it actually happens. Nashville comes in a bit more pragmatically, like, okay, we're coming in, we'll solidify ourselves, and eventually you see a window of performance, a window of a championship window, we call it, where you see your opportunities and you're just one or two players away from having a great contending team, and you sign that expensive DP. It's perfect. You sign that expensive DP on year one and you surround himself with players of not the same caliber, you're going to have like $5 million going down the drain, literally the equivalent if you don't make your playoffs in the first year and you spend $10 million on a DP. So I think the pragmatical approach of having a team getting there, growing together, a core group of players that'll take a season or two to grow and to achieve a certain amount of chemistry over the years, and you stay patient and you use stability as a mean of constructing your team, and eventually you add that missing piece, You spend that money 2-3 years in, and you make the playoff, and you maybe make a run. That seems a bit more pragmatic if you're Nashville. So, no, I can see this happened really without a lot of imagination.
Yeah, if you try and just plug a DP in to solve all your problems and to propel you to the top, what you're going to have is a situation similar to TFC in 2014 where Jermaine Defoe came in, and he did actually very well, but the team still missed the playoffs. Now, part of that was because Defoe had a bit of a pity party in the middle of the season and all that sort of stuff. But nonetheless, the point is, it takes a build before you can plug that DP in. And you know, to continue the TFC analogy, they had 2014 where they did get some pieces that became key parts of their championship teams that they then said, okay, what do we really need here? And they found Josie, they found Giovinco, and then suddenly you have the band together, right? So you need to kind of see what you have before you can really spend huge. And I think that, you know, there are lots of reasons, for a quick aside, that TFC needed to put Defoe in there. It's a different analogy in some ways, but in terms of just the idea of like just taking a player and putting him in and having to rescue things, no, you can't just do that. And I think it's the right approach for Nashville, particularly a team like Nashville, as you say, that's not going to have $10 million, but might have $3 million to spend in a few years, right?
Yeah, no, it's the exact, like, just remember when Orlando spent a lot of money on Sacha Kljestan. Well, that for me was a bit of a waste of finances, a waste of resources. And we're seeing happen time and time again. We've seen it in Montreal. We're seeing everywhere where bad contracts in a year where you have like no shots. I like to use, sometimes I use different things to illustrate my point. Listeners will know this. And I know it's not soccer. I'm going to use another sport here to illustrate my point. I'm going to use baseball, and especially the division that has the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, the Tampa Bay Rays, Baltimore Orioles, and the Yankees, right? One of the hardest division in all those sports to get out of. Each year going into it, you don't necessarily look at how much you spent. You look at the roster of the Yankees and the Red Sox, like, are these teams going to contend this year? Oh, maybe not. It's an off year for them. This year, it's time to go for it because we have a better probability of going for it. And I think that mentality in a league like Major League Soccer, where the haves and have not are starting to appear, it will give you an opportunity. Like in La Liga, if you're like Bilbao, you're not going to sign Messi not a good example. You're not going to get Ronaldo back to La Liga if you know that Madrid and Barcelona are going to be at their top this year. It doesn't make any sense. I think it's that mentality, that pragmatical mentality, especially in the playoff league where even being number one all season long doesn't mean necessarily a lot heading into the playoff. You can ask LAFC that. I think the pragmatical approach of how they spend their money, looking at how the other big teams in Major League Soccer, what's their position in their, I would say they're building. Are they like at their peak of their window? Are they contending now? Are they on the rise? Are they on the decline? Depending on where the other teams are, especially the powerhouse teams, Seattle, LA, Atlanta, TFC, depending on these teams, you'll see teams decide to, okay, we'll go for it in 2 years. And I think that's going to start, and Nashville will be a good example of that.
Fair enough. All right. My third prediction is that this is the year that MLS makes a breakthrough in the CCL, and we have a CCL champion come from Major League Soccer, and I think that team will be the defending MLS Cup champions, the Seattle Sounders. Although they have made some rumblings that maybe they have to learn at least from what happened to SKC and TFC, I do think that they are interested as a club to win that competition, and combining that with the draw that they got, which is fairly easy, although they do have Tigres on their side of the draw, and that will be the big challenge for them, will allow them, I think, maybe to have a real good chance to get through and go deep and win that final if they're coming in focused on it. That may mean that they are not as high up in the regular season. I do think that that is something that all MLS teams, until there is a significant difference in the CPA, are going to have to deal with, but I do think that this is the year. I would have picked LAFC to do this, but their draw is absurd. I just don't think that they can do today. I just don't think they can get through. There's many strong Liga MX teams as you have to win. I mean, we can point to the 2018 example, but Toronto didn't win it. They came up just short at the end, and it legitimately killed them, as we all know. So
yeah, well, you can all the way go to Montreal, even in 2015. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because I even thought about making one of my predictions, my bold prediction, Montreal going all the way to the semifinal. I couldn't bring myself to make Montreal a finalist. But teams have been close, and Seattle could be that team. And who knows? Maybe it actually goes hand in hand with me saying Seattle will not make the playoffs because they're going to not focus, but they're going to be the congested schedule with the CCL back in the summer when it all finishes. Maybe. But that's a very good one. That's a bold prediction, but I can see it happen. The gap might not be as big as we think it is, and I think it's the tall poppy syndrome in Major League Soccer where we like to think that we're not as good as maybe we are. Look at players going abroad and performing. Sometimes maybe we are a bit better than we think. I think Dwayne is right when he says Major League Soccer is the most underrated and overrated league in the world at the exact same time. That's a good one. Seattle going maybe all the way and lifting the CCL trophy.
Yeah, the difference is the depth. I don't think that's anything controversial to say. But I'll tell you this: if the CCL hangover knocks Seattle out of the playoffs for the first time ever, I have a hunch that Major League Soccer might actually finally do something about it, because Seattle is that marquee market that they like to see big crowds in the playoffs. And you know, Toronto is in Toronto and is in Canada, and they, you know, to recognize that it's an important team, but it's in Canada, and SKC's mid, you know, flyover country. So it doesn't get a lot of, well, they have great crowds again. They don't necessarily market with them. So yeah, I think Seattle would be the one that might make MLS go, oh, maybe we should actually listen to these teams and help them with their depth. That's what they need, honestly, is that here's my quick, this is completely ad lib now, Kevin, but this is my quick way that I would help the CCL teams in MLS without necessarily rocking the boat too much on the parity side of things, which they don't want to do. It's not that I care about it, but they don't want to do it, so I have to recognize that. I would simply allow them to have 5 extra roster spots during the CCL. That would allow them, when they're playing MLS games in between that, to actually rotate in a true way. And I think that would be a big difference.
Even if it's academy players or whatever, no, it would make a big difference.
Yeah, but I think that's what the caveat would be, is because they would be loans or academy players.
So you don't have to sign them. Example, it could be just that they don't count on your cap.
Yes, something like that. That would allow them to have an extra few players that they could rotate in. And then, you know, if that was only as soon as they're out of the CCL, those roster spots go back and those players' contracts expire. And so, you know, the very nature of that kind of contract would limit the type of player that you would be bringing in. I mean, you'd be kind of essentially could get either trialists that would be there and you'd be looking at them, and whether you want to sign them after would be your decision, or you'd be looking at your own academy kids.
It's a way to test an academy player. Like we've seen Schaffelberg test 2 years ago when it was in the Canadian Championship, and eventually he made good impression with Toronto FC. So no, it could be that too. It could be like an audition for an academy player. You got a couple games and hook, if you make a good impression, you can find yourself with a contract after. You know, it's a very interesting one to see that happen. All right, let's go with my fourth bold prediction for 2020. This one is, you're going to like it, I think. All right, we've talked about how they're not supposed to be any expansion in 2020, and that's not my prediction. I just think that's going to happen. No announcement of an expansion in 2020. But there's a word that's going to start appearing in conversations, in lexicon around Major League Soccer, if a couple teams are continuing with struggling with assistance, struggling on the field, and struggling on multiple business levels in Major League Soccer. Looking at you, Dallas, another team like that. Maybe the word relocation becomes part of a conversation in Major League Soccer in 2020. I believe the R word becomes a familiar word in our public Major League Soccer consciousness in 2020.
Perhaps. I mean, we do have the lesson of save the crew here, that they're going to be a little reluctant to jump in with 2 feet that way. But I do think that there is certain markets that are in danger of having something dramatic happen. I mean, let's look at Chicago in depth. I see what's happening with the Fire rebrand. Rebrand-esque, I guess. Whatever the hell they're doing there. I tried to find out. I heard an interview with the new owner, and I keep forgetting the gentleman's name. I'll have to commit that to memory at some point. But the new owner, we'll say for now, And he said that his goal to his ticket selling staff was to sell out Soldier Field for their their opener. Now, I don't know whether he meant sell out the entire damn 70,000 seat stadium or whether he meant sell out whatever they're going to call a sellout.
And you've asked recently, and according, maybe that's true as a couple of days ago, but there's about 6,000 season tickets sold for the Chicago Fire. But it's Dallas I'm looking at as well. I'm thinking that now that expansion and MLS might take their time to go from 30 to 32, I believe the relocation might become one part of leverage on Major League Soccer side to be able to prop MLS 1.0 type teams a bit higher. So I'm looking at like teams like Dallas, teams like Colorado, like teams like even Chicago to an extent. If it fails for 1 year, and if it fails at Soldier Field, who knows? But I think there is in the contract and in the new ownership, there's a clause that probably says it has to be in Chicago for at least 25 years or something. So I don't necessarily expect Chicago to be moved, but I'm looking at Dallas, and I'm looking at pretty much Dallas is where I was thinking. But I think the word relocation, even if it doesn't apply to one team, will become a trope in Major League Soccer and will become a potential avenue for ownership to look at, which is not necessarily the best thing. But if expansion are not going to be part of it, and there's more market that wants a soccer team, something's got to give, and it's relocation. It's going to be part of the lexicon in 2020.
Yeah, I will agree to disagree that on relocation, I think what's more likely, particularly with big markets like Dallas, is for something, we'll call it the Chivas model, where they shut it down for a couple years and then restarted up with a complete fresh start. I think that separation allows those rebrands to more, work more effectively, and that's why I look at Chicago and you know, they have moved it back into the city. I would have, if I were them, have completely, like, I might have shut it down for a year if I were the Fire owners and say, look, we need a year to completely rebuild, like, distribute the players, and we'll start from scratch as an expansion team again. I almost would have done that because the Fire brand is too broken in that market, and what they've done is this half measure that you mentioned 6,000 season tickets. If they're getting 20,000 even in Soldier Field, it's going to look terrible, and I think they're going to be more getting like 15,000. So, and then where do you go from there?
People don't realize, Dwayne, like Soldier Field is immense. Like, it's the second biggest stadium I've ever been to outside of Estadio Azteca. And I remember walking to my seat on the press box. It took me 20 minutes to walk from the elevator to my freaking seat on the press box, half the way across the stadium. It was incredibly big. And yeah, 20,000 will look like there's 20 people in a 2,000 people church. That's exactly what it's going to look like.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. Now I'm going to move into my final two, which my final two. Look, I'm going to reserve the ability to change my mind on this in 2 months when we do our season predictions. So don't save this podcast.
Oh, no, same for me. Like, I might put Seattle in the playoffs in 2 months if they sign a couple of players. Who knows? This is for today. This is as valid as January 2nd, 2019.
Yeah.
2020.
Yeah, I might change my mind tomorrow. We don't know. But I'm looking at the East, and I'm looking at how weak it was, and I'm looking at how the season ended last year, and I'm looking at what teams seemed to be going on the uptick. And when I look at the East and I guess which teams are going to be moving up and which teams are going to be moving down, I see two teams that are going to be moving up, and the rest, I think, are either staying still or moving down, or we're too far down that even if they move up, it won't matter. So when I do that, I start to work things in my mind, and I look at what kind of changes can these teams make that are going to be significant and impacts on what happens. And I come up with one that I'm always reluctant to make bold, strong, positive predictions about, but I'm going to start New Year's off with a brave prediction from the Toronto guy. I think TFC is going to win the Shield next year. And this is why. The East is bad, and I think they're going to add a real big impact player. And that's the team was kind of flawed last year. They figured it out in the back. They got the MLS Cup. They add a star on the wings, which allows Josie to have less pressure on him, less marking, opens it up a bit more. Pozuelo's had more time off this year to actually start fresh. I think they could win the Shield next year. Whether they win MLS Cup, who knows? That's a crapshoot at the end.
Toronto guy talking about load management. I've seen this story before.
Look, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to end up making this prediction when it comes to make the actual prediction, but I do think Toronto is going to be very strong next year based on how they finished last year and the ability to add another player.
It's a bold prediction. It's what it's here for. It's what we're here for today. All right. My number one bold prediction for the 2020 MLS season. I have a feeling you might have the same because I know you, but it's still worth it. I'm going to go with it. In 2020, there will be a work stoppage in Major League Soccer after the end of the CCL or after every Major League Soccer team is out of the CONCACAF Champions League. It's so weird. The CBA is under negotiations and we're not hearing anything right now on either side. It's either really good or really bad. And I believe it's the latter. Will it be a strike? Will it be a lockout? Which side will decide to use leverage before the other one? Of course, we'll know more at the end of January and whenever we get closer to February. And also when the last team is eliminated from the CCL and whatever the case may be. But that's my bold prediction for Major League Soccer. There will be a strike or a lockout in 2020 in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, I'm 50-50 on it. I think that there's a couple things that you'll look at that will give you stronger indications. The CBA runs out in 28 days or 29 days, pardon me, there's 31 days in February. So I think that, first off, if we start to hear rumbling, we will start to hear rumblings in the next week or so once camps start to open up, because the players will then start to be talking to people that they trust off record, and those will start to leak. So that's something we're going to see here. The CCL is a key indicator. I do think that the league is reluctant to cause problems within CONCACAF, and it would cause problems. They would have to either play their academy players, or they would have to forfeit those games. If they forfeit those games, then that's going to create a big mess, and they don't want to do that. I don't think they'd be suspended or anything like that. I think, you know, they're too powerful within CONCACAF to do that or to have that happen, but I don't think they want to cause the problems. So basically, if there's a lockout before the season starts, there won't be a lockout before the season starts, because I don't think the owners will want to do that. I think the owners are perfectly happy starting the season with the current CBA in place. So it would be up to the players. So the question comes down to whether the players want to pull the plug on February 1st, which would then put the CCL in jeopardy and put some pressure on the ownership, or whether they want to play those games, the teams that are involved, and, you know, continue on camps on normal and put the ball back in the owner's court. Because you're right. Once all those teams are out of the CCL, that's when the owners will be at that point saying, well, let's just shut it down, because realistically our best attendance doesn't come until probably June, July. We're not too worried about, you know, as long as we're running by those July 4th games, a lot of those teams look at those games as a moneymaker for them, as marketing to push into the fall season, to sell some half season packs and things like that. They'd probably be happy with doing a season. They might save money, right? Then not lose money. They might save money to not play for the spring season. So that's the big key indicators that you'll find. And this is a topic I'm going to have to talk a little bit about. I did not put that in my thing. I said I am 50-50. I do think at this point in time, the reason I'm more leaning towards they get something done is because I do not think the average players make enough yet that they can afford a long-term 6-month type shutdown. And I think you have to be in position as a professional athlete to be able to afford to lose an entire season without being paid before you can really push the envelope. That's why, you know, the baseball players canceled the World Series. It's why we lost an entire season of NHL hockey. We lost more than half of the season of the NBA. It's because those players had the power to do that at that point. And yeah, MLS players have the power to shut it down for a few weeks. You know, they're in better shape than a coal miner would be, but they don't have the power to shut it down for a whole year yet. And then till they do, I think the owners have too much power, and eventually it gets figured out. But we'll see. It's certainly going to be a topic that will be much in discussion in the days ahead.
Yep, and that's my last bold prediction for today. Dwayne, your last bold prediction for today.
That come next November 9th, was it 7th, 9th, whatever, around there, early November, that the MLS world will gather and take a deep sigh and watch as for the fourth time in 5 years, Toronto FC takes on Seattle in MLS Cup. Roar, part four.
What? So it's 3 out of 5? It's going to be a best 3 out of 5 instead of 2 out of 3? Oh, geez. It's just going to happen like this year and next year. Oh, man. I don't think I can go through another MLS Cup between Seattle and Toronto.
Dude, think of the poor Whitecaps fans.
Can you have it at like a random site? Jeez, like Toronto. It's gonna be Seattle again, and where's the fifth one's gonna be? Like you need a, God, I hope your prediction's not right.
I kind of predicted just because I like to watch the world burn sometimes.
That's true.
I'm
That's
in
true.
Toronto, so if Toronto's in the MLS Cup final, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Well, you are in the center of the universe after all.
I'm in the center. No, Winnipeg's the center of the country. But yeah,
I'm not talking about the country. I'm talking about the universe.
The entire damn universe. Yes, yes. We're broadcasting in Regina right now, where Toronto is thought. They don't think Toronto's the center of the universe. They think Toronto thinks it's the center of the universe for our American listeners, at any rate.
Which they might not be that far off, but no.
Toronto doesn't think of Regina. That's what they're getting at. They're just mad that no one's talking about whatever the hell's happening there.
No one thinks about Regina. Sorry. Sorry, Joe. And sorry, guys. Yeah. We're not... We don't mean any disrespect to Saskatchewan.
At any rate, yeah, look, I mean, who knows? Predicting who's going to win MLS Cup, who's going to be an MLS Cup final in January 2nd is the equivalent of predicting, I don't know, like what the lottery numbers are, really. But
that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. So tomorrow night, big $70 million jackpot in Canada. The winning numbers will be 1, 5, 2, 28, 54, and 79.
I'll say this. I think that they're based on the power of the rosters as they stand today, that there is a chance that that could happen again. How big of a chance? I don't know. Depends on how the season works out. But it's definitely not within the realm of like stupidity to say that it might happen again in the next couple of years. So we'll see.
Famous words, Dwayne saying there is a chance. Samsonite. Mary Samsonite, there's always a chance. On that note, Dwayne and I will finish our holidays and tomorrow back with an actual real scoreboard news type of show. Dwayne, I'm all out of top 10, and that's kind of good. Can't wait to get back to the regular programming schedule.
Yeah, we've done a lot of lists. We have one more, I think, we're going to be doing two in terms of five rings. But
yeah, but that's not a soccer list. Like I'm all soccer list out.
There you go. So yeah, we'll be getting back to the regular formation of this, and I'll be, you know, back doing my regular routines, which I'm looking forward to. This is a weird week. Oh my God, this is such a weird week.
Having New Year's in the middle of the week makes like is it Sunday today? I don't know. Is it Monday? Feels like Monday, but it's Thursday, and tomorrow's Friday. But yeah, exactly. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Soccer Today. You can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and this show at Soccer Today SPN Live, Monday to Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific. Podcast version available everywhere you get your podcasts. And for patrons, which you can become a Patreon on our Patreon feed, patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. $2 tier will give you access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, which there'll be an episode recorded in the next few days. $5 will give you the SPN Extra feed, which after the holiday break, it's coming back next week with all your different Five Rings Extra. We're looking at Soccer Today Presents. We're looking at also more. I'm going to give you next week a little teaser on the $5 tier for the documentary that comes out later tonight. Today, I'm putting the finishing touches on the 2000 Gold Cup documentary for the documentary tier at $10, and it will be available later tonight and for your listening pleasures in the morning. But until tomorrow, as always, I'm Kevin Laramie, and have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.